Hello and welcome back to Coffee with Conservationists, the podcast where I sit down with people who dedicate their lives to researching, protecting and documenting nature. I talk to them about issues affecting wildlife, the climate and global biodiversity. We cover diverse topics within ecology, biology, storytelling, activism and much more. Today's coffee feature isn't actually a coffee, nor is it a feature. It's more of a brief mention, more details will follow, and it's actually a delicious drinking chocolate from local company Chocolada. I'll tell you a bit more at the end of the episode. Today I talk with marine science student Radha Pandava. We talk about her Erasmus Plus small-scale partnership, the Thalassophile Project, which aims to make marine science accessible to everyone, with a focus on deaf and visually impaired people. Hi Radha, thank you for coming on and being so patient while we find a quiet-ish space to record. Hopefully this will be okay. The acoustics are not amazing in here, but it is what it is. It's better than the very noisy cafe that we've just come from. So can we start by asking a bit about you? And as you've said, you've done a bit of research and listened to the podcast before, you know how this goes. I'm going to ask, where your kind of passions and interests in the environment and nature first started.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I'm originally from Bulgaria, from a town called Plovdiv. And it's sort of in the middle of the country. Which country is located above Greece, if that's sort of a nice way to put it in perspective for the listeners. But it's a landlocked part of the country. We do have the Black Sea on the eastern, it's like our eastern border. So I've been lucky to grow up in a country that has had an incredible nature, and my parents, we really used to go many hikes and many places, which I really miss. So when people ask me, when I think of home, I don't actually think about my home, where my house is, you know, where I live. I think about all those sort of little mountain huts we would stay at when I was young and so on. Anyway, that was a little bit of a tangent. I was from a landlocked part of Bulgaria. But sort of every summer, we would try and travel either to the Black Sea or the Aegean Sea. So in Greece, we would travel to Greece. And sort of, I think that's where like my proper marine passion was formed, because you really could not find me anywhere but in the sea. I was not at the beach. Like, if you needed to speak to me, you'll have to wait for me to come out. I was just fascinated, you know, with my goggles, looking at the little fish. I did not understand anything. I didn't even imagine that that was a potential career path I could follow. I was just enjoying my time there. And obviously, many young girls really love, or not girls, anyone, I imagine. Little Mermaid was a big, big, big film. For me, the story and then the animated film. And now the live-action film as well has just been... I've just been so fascinated with mermaids, you know, the fictional side of the marine world. Would read stories. I even brought my mermaid book to university, which I've had for many years now. So yeah, that's how it started. I was just always fascinated with it. I always believed in magic, and I've always wanted to become a mermaid. I would say that's how it formed.
Amazing. I don't think we've really had anyone I don't think I've really had anyone talk about the fictional or magical, depending on what you believe. Obviously not everyone's gonna believe that it is fiction, side of conservation and nature, and I think that's something that I'll definitely like to explore in the future, is the folklore and mysticism behind most of our natural spaces and landscapes, especially here in Cornwall.
Absolutely. So much energy. Very close to that. Absolutely.
We're both here mostly to talk about your project that you started while at university.
I started it just before I embarked on my university journey.
So could you give us kind of a rundown of kind of what it is, why you started it, why it's important to you?
So the project is called the Thalassophile Project. Thalassophile is a pretty long and a little bit difficult word to pronounce, but it means a lover of the seas and oceans. Well, not oceans, a lover of the seas and ocean, because I really believe that there is one ocean that is absolutely interconnected, and just it's just easier to call it in a different way in different places. But as I said, I've been identifying as a thalassophile my whole life. So I decided, you know, as someone who grew up in a landlocked area of Bulgaria and still managed to develop that passion for the marine world, which I would not see often, I wanted to share that with fellow landlocked living people, Bulgarians, or whoever was listening, because I recorded the podcast in English. So it started as a podcast. I also started the podcast, which it's no longer really a podcast. It has evolved since then. But I just thought that was a nice way to be able to communicate my passions to people all around the world. And the first episode I released in July 2021. However, the idea for the Thalassophile Project was formed many years back. I guess I just needed that little bit of courage to put something out there in the world, which I'm sure you can relate is a little bit scary.
Definitely.
When you love something so much and you put it out there for people to hear or see. And then fast forward, well, it took a few months for me to release two more episodes. I released a trailer talking about what the project would be about, which was about obviously me sharing my love for the ocean and anything I would learn about marine conservation that I would like to share with people, encourage them how they can be active marine citizens and so on. And then I released the longest episode was in Bulgarian, which was about the dolphins and the porpoises in the Black Sea with a professional in Bulgaria. And actually, fun fact, I would love to work in ocean acoustics, and I'm hoping to write my dissertation on ocean acoustics in the Black Sea, because that really hasn't been done, hasn't been researched that well, and I'm sure many sort of science communication, citizen science, can come out of that and get sort of the Bulgarian people more engaged with the Black Sea and protect it better. And then I had a few, as I told you earlier, I had a few podcast assignments as part of my university course, and one of them I published, which was about ocean acoustics, actually, because my tutor works in that field as well. Anyway, and then actually exactly pretty much a year after I published the first episode, we got the very good news that the project was funded by Erasmus Plus. But let me just go back a step before that funding happened. I met the right people. I told them that I have this project. And they said, let's talk again in a few months and see if we can get funding for it. And then I had to sit down with myself and think, I could do the podcast, and I did not need the funds to do the podcast. So I was like, well, we talk about money, you know, and if someone is willing to give you money, you should use them in the best way possible. And I thought, okay, what can we... Because we were going to write a funding application anyway. I just wanted to be really, you know, really worthwhile. And I thought, okay, it's time for the Thalassophile Project to evolve. And I thought, okay, what can we do? I remember lying in my bed in the student accommodation thinking, that's it, we're going to do it, we're going to create a platform to make marine science accessible to everyone universally, but with a focus on deaf and blind individuals. And there's also a backstory to that. That idea didn't just come into my head. I did the Duke of Edinburgh Award, bronze and silver back in Bulgaria. And I studied first Bulgarian Sign Language and then British Sign Language as my skills section. And I remember going to the only school for deaf children in Plovdiv in my hometown. And I just remember feeling that really I wanted to be able to communicate for those kids. You know, I wanted to be able to talk to them. And then later on in high school in Bulgaria, before I moved to the UK, one of my closest friends was fully blind. Mm. And that's not a common thing for a fully blind person to be in, you know, a regular, in quotation marks, no, a regular school. But it's kind of been a reoccurring theme in my life, and I thought, okay, if my life is sort of always ending up in that realm, I need to do something. But so I ended up combining those two passions, and because of these wonderful people in my life that really believed in that and helped me do the, you know, the side of the funding that I did, I do not have knowledge in that field. We sort of combined efforts, joint efforts, and we put out the application. And then in July 2022, we heard the news that we're going to receive funds to actually lay the basis of this platform for accessibility.
Amazing. That was a perfect explanation, and you covered a lot in that answer. Yeah. For those who don't know, just before we address the bigger, more important issues on the podcast, can you explain what Erasmus Plus is?
Yeah.
Just briefly? Just
absolutely. Well, from what I know, when I was still in Bulgaria, many of my friends would go to Erasmus Plus sort of internships in different places in Europe. It's essentially this, like a joint effort of different European countries that exchange... I'm not sure how to explain it. I mean, it's by the European Union. Essentially, mm-hmm. The European Union would fund different areas, whether that's science, like in our case, or projects about science communication. But it would also organize those Erasmus Plus exchanges for different students or young people to travel across Europe. They're just this network of this body of, I'm sure I should be able to explain that better, but in my head is this network of different organizations within the European Union that fund different projects or opportunities like that.
Amazing. I try and break down as much terminology and scientific.
That's the whole point of the project as well.
To jargon as possible in the podcast. I'm looking, just because I didn't have it prepared before, I'm now looking at the the website of the project and that you're building this framework. Could you, obviously you've explained why you're doing it, could you kind of talk me through the process of building the framework and what it entails and what it's going to be what it's going to look like when it's finished?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, the framework is finished at the moment. Or at least the very first version of it is finished. I'm sure we'll be expanding on it in the next months. It all started with my passion, but me as a very young, just starting university person, I did not have enough knowledge or anything. I just knew I loved this. I wanted to do it. I didn't know what the steps would be, which is why, again, Interchange is the company we work together with. So they're the experts, and we basically sat down and we decided, okay, what's feasible? How can we lay that foundation for something that is not so sort of spread out? In my opinion, it should be a very common thing in any educational spaces, but it isn't yet. And how can we lay the basis so other organizations or people, institutions can sort of take parts of that and make it their own? So the framework is this 18-page document, I believe. It's digital. Mm-hmm. It can be found on the website, thalassofileproject.org. This is a difficult word, so I'm sure you will put it anyway.
I'll link everything.
Absolutely. And we created it together with our partners from the Institute for the Deaf in Turin, Italy. So they are our accessible pedagogies, experts in accessible pedagogy, essentially. And we wrote this, like, pages of guidelines. Different things to think about when it comes to accessibility. For example, you probably saw yesterday, I shared on my story, the difference between captions and subtitles. Closed captions and subtitles. For people who don't know, closed captions essentially describe, I'm sure I can explain that much better, but closed captions essentially describe everything, including sounds, anything that's happening in the environment.
Yeah.
You know how Netflix does it very well.
Yeah.
They just explain what's happening around, so a hard of hearing or deaf person can really sort of immerse themselves in that hearing world. And then subtitles, essentially the translation.
Yeah.
Because if a language is, if a film is in French, mm-hmm. subtitles would translate that in a different language. Anyway,
that's automatically translated speech usually, and it's not always done very well. I've seen some very funny YouTube videos where the subtitles don't line up to what the person's saying.
Yes.
And obviously, you know, as a fully hearing person, I can laugh at that, but it's a major, major barrier to communicating the thing.
Studio Ghibli films. So I recently learned that it's pronounced Ghibli. You know, Princess Mononoke, Spirited Away. It's actually Ghibli, even though Ghibli sounds a lot more.
I did not know that. Yeah, and I've really been a fan for learned. Many, many years.
And I think it's a reliable source that I heard it from. Okay. And they, because they're originally in Japanese, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you listen, because Netflix gives you the option to put it in with English audio instead of the original Japanese audio, but you can also put the English subtitles as well as the English audio. And many, the disparity between the English subtitles and the English audio are very, very different.
Yeah.
The subtitles translate directly from Japanese.
Okay.
But the audio sounds like a native English person would speak.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So some phrases in a different language cannot be translated literally.
Yeah.
They have to be said in a more, colloquial, is that the word for it? You know, a more...
Yeah. So that's why, having that distinction between subtitles and closed captions is so important.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's one of the many ways that, you knowing that is helping you make your project more accessible to everyone.
And then something else in the framework is things to think about, like the color contrast. So there is this website, which I will give you so you can put potentially or direct people to it. The background and the color of the font that you're using, they have to have this, it's like a specific number that tells you what the contrast is like. Otherwise, visually impaired people with low vision will struggle to read it. And there are these websites that we have linked into that framework that helps you see, like, if you really love these two colors, but they don't sort of have that contrast tick that you should get, maybe you need to look, like, adjust it properly. What other things? It's really a guideline of how to make resources more accessible. It starts with sort of an introduction of why we're doing this, different European standards that are included in there, and then it goes on to talk about multisensory learning, how this, that's something I really wanted to talk to you about, you know, this not just engaging the eyesight, but not just engaging the hearing, engaging, tactile learning, kinesthetic learning, I believe it's called as well, engaging, smell, anything, taste, because I did write this down because I thought it was very, very curious. Is that all right?
Yeah, of course.
It said, multisensory learning allows you to connect to something in more than one way. And it's just, how certain smells bring you back to a specific moment in your childhood, or at least that's what they do for me, especially perfume smells. Or a particular song, when you listen to it, you can remember how you were feeling in that moment of your life. And I think engaging all of those senses, and connecting in more than one way to one particular thing, I think that's the most accessible and effective way of really, just developing that love in an individual about something.
It's a really empathetic method of learning as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. Emotional learning, empathetic learning, I think.
Yeah. I've come across so many, ways of learning that people say are accessible, but they're really simple, the basic, they're the kind of...
Yeah.
The bare minimum that an organisation has to do to tick a box, basically. Yeah. They're not imbued with the same passions and love for the topic
exactly.
that the the other content that they produce is for non-disabled people and able-bodied folks.
Yeah.
The framework, is it aimed primarily for organisations and individuals creating content, or is it kind of, can it be aimed at anyone?
I would say it can be aimed at anyone,
yeah.
because it really is a basic guideline. So the Erasmus Plus funding we got is for a small-scale partnership. So our main goal is to really, as I told you, to lay the foundation. And it is my dream, and I would continue working in this field even after this funding has finished, because I really can feel this is, you know, my life's mission. As I told you, my life has been always bringing me back to that accessibility and science, and just combining those two passions of mine. So yeah, I'm sure everybody can use it, because it really provides just, how can I say, really, as you said, you know, basic guidelines for you to make sure your content is accessible, like putting those captions on those Instagram videos, but also adding the alt text, which is an option that Instagram and other social media platforms have already programmed in. You're just supposed to describe in those alt text what the picture is showing,
yeah,
for a person who cannot see that. Yeah, I would say everybody can use that. It is mainly, obviously, the goal is to really make institutions like ours, you know, make their curriculum more accessible and available to anyone and everyone that has interest in and that would like to study further. You know, the background and ability of someone should not be an obstacle to them doing something they want to do or love doing or something like that. That's the basis.
Yeah, absolutely. Essence. I think that's such an important thing to mention. Obviously, I've come across that a lot in my learning and the content that I produce as a photographer as well.
Yeah.
I always try and make my video work accessible for everyone, and I usually provide my clients with the options, so both subtitled and captioned and non-captioned videos. But it's something that I'm definitely guilty of forgetting with my images often on social media.
And I forget as well. As I told you, I mean, I'm still learning, and I'm sure that will be lifelong learning. Everything starts with awareness, I think, and you are aware of it. I mean, we are all humans, and mistakes, well, I wouldn't even call them mistakes. You're just changing your learning style, something you have not been taught when you were young, all of a sudden trying to make everything accessible in your work.
Absolutely. I think it's a really, I'm not sure if did you say the quote already that you wanted to say?
No, I haven't, but I think that's a good
point. I think it's a perfect point to bring up this quote that you sent me earlier.
Yes.
And I'll let you read it.
Yeah.
But it's an important thing, especially when it comes to environmental education.
No, absolutely. I actually have two more quotes after that, but we'll see if they will come right after or in between.
Okay.
The quote you're talking about is, "We will conserve only what we love, we will love only what we understand, and we will understand only what we are taught."
Mm.
I'm not sure I can pronounce the name of the person. Baba Dium? Something
I'd
like
say
that.
That's how I would have pronounced it, but it might not be how they pronounce it themselves, so...
Apologies.
I'm not quite sure, but that's a wonderful quote, because it sums up everything that you're trying to do and that you've talked about.
That everything starts with education.
Yeah.
I think curiosity is a really big thing when it comes to the world of science, the world of any world. I think curiosity is a very big thing that can lead new discoveries and innovation. I absolutely agree that, not just agree, but that's a very, I imagine, right, I don't know what the word is, that theory. But yeah, and on that note, actually, one of the quotes I have is really good as well. It's by Jacques-Yves Cousteau. I don't know what they call him, the father of... He created the first, essentially, scuba diving suit.
Yes.
He said, "People protect what they love, they love what they understand, and they understand what they are taught.
Mm.
Which is essentially the same thing as the previous one.
Yeah. But it shows that lots of people are...
Absolutely, because it really...
Are on the same wavelength.
Think about it, it's quite a logical way. As soon as you learn about something, like me and the mermaids, and then dive in the sea, that would develop this curiosity, that would develop... That would turn into, you know, something deeper, you know, would turn into love. And then I guess once you're old enough, like I was... it could turn into a proper conservation career or marine science career, but that has to be accessible so everyone can do that. Mm. Everybody has to have a seat at the table for us to do anything, as I told you yesterday, in that climate fight. I really strongly believe that we need everyone on board. A little bit of a marine pun there.
Yeah,
on board.
Absolutely. My mind's gone completely blank, which is that's great. I'm very tired, I'm afraid. Would you say, having kind of being current student, would you say that your current curriculum is accessible? Do you know many people who are either hearing or visually impaired on your current group or cohort?
Yeah, the answer is... No, the curriculum is not accessible. I actually recently spoke to people who work in the department who is... I'm not sure what department is, but it's in the university that sort of... They would know. They would have those statistics. And I asked them... I don't know if it was ethical to ask them, but... I don't know if they could tell me privacy-wise, but I asked, do you have statistics on how many... deaf or blind individuals we have who are embarking on... any degree, not just marine science. They just couldn't answer that question, probably because there aren't many. I don't personally know anyone.
Yeah.
It really is... No, it's not accessible, which... I mean, we have so many field trips and things that require, you know, doing things, and you have to listen to lectures, you have to write. But I'm sure these things can be adapted.
Mm.
I think they haven't adapted them because not many disabled people like that have have shown interest in it. But how can they show interest when nothing is friendly, like accessibility friendly? Like, I wouldn't want to go to a place that clearly doesn't have anything set. But also, I'm not entirely sure how that works. I should probably research the policy of my university and see how...
Yeah, I think that'd be a really interesting point to look
at. Definitely. I mean,
and I think definitely at some point in the future, with more time, preparation, we could come back and do a follow-up episode.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Maybe where we talk to somebody who is affected by these policies and is, you know, has been helped by your framework.
Yeah.
We bring someone's lived experience onto the podcast.
Yeah.
I think would be really...
That would be...
really interesting to follow up with.
Rewarding.
To see how everything's going.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else you'd like to cover? Or
For the project, yes. Well, the framework, I wanted to tell you that was the first step of sort of starting to implement that funding plan. We're currently developing these four original, I want to say podcasts, but obviously... They will not just be podcast episodes. There will be sign language videos as well.
Mm-hmm.
They will be recorded in international sign. But I will talk about international sign in just a minute. So we're currently developing them. And they're essentially marine scientists. We'll talk about sort of... I don't want to say basic because in itself it's not that... intuitive, you know, it is because basic sometimes would mean also intuitive. It's just marine concepts that I think people should understand or know about in order to understand how big of a role the ocean and just any salt basins have in regulating our climate, you know, providing...
I think, basic would be a good word because it's, you know, it's not like PhD subjects or niche science exclusive subject. It's like baseline.
Exactly.
Everyone can understand subject.
And everyone is affected by those processes, which is why I think everybody should be able to learn about them if they wanted to, or at least be exposed to that information in some way or another. So we're currently developing those, and then we will translate them, well, record them. I'm not sure translation. Well, yeah, translate them into international sign, because international sign, it's not actually a language in itself. So I recently learned that international sign language is not a thing. There is not an international sign language. The same way there is not a international language that everybody can speak, because English is English, you know, just many people, we have decided this will be the language that if you learn, you'll be able to communicate with many people around the world. But the same way there is Bulgarian language, the same way there is a Bulgarian sign language, which is different to British sign language, which is different to American sign language, and so on. So our partners are based in Italy, so they use Italian sign language, but they can, there's some signs that people ask me, how is there no universal sign language? Surely, surely some signs would be the same, and that's what international sign is. You know, certain signs have been sort of universally accepted, I would say, but also I'm not an expert on this. I'm just sharing what my perspective is. So that's sort of what international sign is. But, you know, Bulgarian language is so different to English language. How can they be the same? The international, you know, the international versions of those the sign languages of those spoken languages, you know, it's so that's the second step. Then the third step, which we have started already, is this online hub, which essentially is a network and a hub, which is why it's called the online hub, of different organizations that have like inspiring practices of already implementing accessibility in their policies, you know, whether that's museums or institutions, academic institutions, organizations, NGOs, anything like that. And on that note, the Marine Aquarium in Plymouth, I don't know how recently you've been there, but I'm sure they've had these for a long time now. They have the international sign for the animal next to the tank of the animal. It's just like a picture of like this animated picture of a person signing the respective animal, which I thought was a really nice way. And that's the sort of exact thing we would like to work with museums. We would like to target, I don't like that word very much, but target museums. And more often they use, you know, auditory descriptions, you know, how you can go to a museum or an aquarium or zoo, even in a different country, you can get those things you plug in, and if you're from a different country, you can listen in your own language and that sort of thing. And they can incorporate Braille as well, anything like that, which to me doesn't sound too complicated to be done, and I'm sure it has been done in many places. But as I told you, I'm still learning, I'm still in the beginning of my journey in that realm. And then the fourth and final thing, I've been talking a lot, but I guess that's what podcasting is. That will be next year, towards the end of the funding period. I don't want to call it that, but we will create these four fact sheets, which will essentially be four summaries of those four podcast episodes, those four episodes, so the marine concepts and anything like that. That will be explained, and then we're still sort of it's a bit up in the air what exactly we're going to do with them. Same with the podcast episodes Same with the episodes, I have a feeling there will be more than four, because I would like them to be more than four. But yeah, that's sort of the four more, I don't know, tangible steps.
Amazing. I think we've kind of covered everything really well. I think the last things are, firstly, how can people find you? Either your personal platforms, if you want to share that, or those of the Lucifer project. Obviously, I'll link everything, but it's always nice to hear it from you.
Yeah, I mean, my personal social media, it is also dedicated to marine conservation, sharing anything, but also personal things that I find worth sharing. But definitely is a marine platform. It is at, I guess you could put that, I'll send it to you. Oh, you have it. It's at Rada, R-A-D-A, Pandeva, P-A-N-D-E-V-A. And then Instagram is of the Thalassopha Project, is Thalassopha Project. And then the website. And I think those are the main two platforms. And actually, I really, really wanted to, I told you, I have one more quote. I think that's quite appropriate. But it also links to the previous two quotes we talked about. It's by a Waorani leader, so an Amazonian leader, Nemonte Nkimo. 3 years ago, in The Guardian, they published this article called My Letter to the Western World. It was a longer title, but that was the main bit of it. Her name is Nemonte Nkimo, and she is obviously an indigenous. I wrote this because I think it's worth sharing. Is a co-founder of the indigenous-led non-profit organization Chibo Alliance. I'm not entirely sure how to pronounce that. And she is the first female president of the Waorani organization of Pastaza province and one of the Times 100 most influential people in the world. She said something that has stayed with me. In 2020, I didn't know what I was going to study yet. I didn't know I was going into marine science, but this quote just stayed with me. She said, "The less you know about something, the less value it has to you, and the easier it is to destroy." Which is essentially the other quotes, but sort of in a reverse. The same way education can really uplift you and make you love something, the same way if you don't know about it, it doesn't mean anything to you, you know. That's why, I guess, as a person from a landlocked area, when you don't see the sea every day, you're not aware of the impact you have or you can have on it. But obviously, all the rivers that flow throughout those landlocked areas, they do end up in the sea. So that is how other people can also be aware of their impact, you know, and really, I mean, I'm sure you've had many episodes, people talking about this. This awareness for me is the main thing. And then if they can, if they have the opportunity or ability to change anything in their daily life, that will have a immediate sort of impact even on the ocean, I think. If they can do that, that will be amazing.
Amazing. I think the last question that I ask everyone is usually how you take your coffee, but you've already said that you don't drink coffee.
No.
Which is really interesting because the next, either the one that is the little bonus episode that I'll release either just before this one or just after, covers that topic a lot. So how do you take your favourite hot drink is a better question.
How do I take it? I mean, you just saw me, I was drinking a hot berry tea. That's probably because I'm a little bit ill, so tea is good. But I usually go for a oat milk hot chocolate from the Sustainability Cafe. I really like those. And the little cookies they have. I really like biscuits and cookies, so that's how I take it, I would say.
Cool. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me and for letting me, as I told you yesterday, for letting me have this platform to share my passions and message.
No problem at all. I really look forward to seeing what you come up with next. Thanks again to Rada for taking the time to speak to me today. You can find links to her social media below. As mentioned at the start, today's coffee feature is actually a drinking chocolate. Chocolada are a sustainable, ethical and delicious chocolate company right down the road from me here in Cornwall. I won't tell you too much about them now, but if you tune in to the upcoming bonus episode, you can find out everything there is to know from Will, Chocolada's Marketing and Business Development Coordinator. Thank you all so much for listening. I've been your host, George Cheapman-Jones, and this is Coffee with Conservationists.